Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to... Hello and welcome to... No. Hello and welcome to Conversations with the Voice of Reason. I'm your host, Benjamin Boyce, and today's conversant is Logan Lansing, who is the author of Queering the American Child. He's a co-author with James Lindsay of that tome, which is a concise overview and explanation of queer theory and how it has infiltrated the United States education system, how it acts, what it does, and how to counter it. You can find his book down there in the description, as well as links to his socials. If you enjoy this content, consider liking, subscribing, and perhaps even donating via the tip jars below. Without further ado, here is Logan Lansing.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Hey, yeah, last time I had to set up all my recording settings, so I'm glad it automated this time. I don't usually use Zooms. I'm a Teams guy for daily use.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, Teams. What industry do you work in, generally speaking? Broadly speaking?
Yeah, the tech? Call center industry.
Oh, okay. Call center. All right. So you manage all the Indians that I have to talk to when I have an electronic problem with my internet connection.
Not quite, but I see where you're going.
Okay. I just spent a lot of time with Comcast yesterday, and hopefully the problem's fixed, but we'll have to see.
Internet issues? Yeah, there's been a lot of those lately.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So my wife... she wants somebody to take accountability for it, and I can't do that for her. I'm just not able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's like that. I tell my wife all the time, are you venting, or do you want someone to do something about it? And in situations like that, it's like, well, both. I'm venting, yeah. And I want you to do something about it. Like, I'm sorry. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. I don't know. How's your book going?
I think it's going well. It's going a heck of a lot better than the first book I published, because I think at that time I had something like a dozen Twitter followers, no online social media presence at all. And I just kind of threw it out there with no marketing. And I think in the first week, maybe 15 people outside of family bought it. So a lot more feedback than the first time around, which is nice. Okay.
What was the first one about?
The first one was called The Woke Warpath, and it was it's a broad topic. It essentially covered the long march through the institutions at a very broad scale. And what I was trying to accomplish with the first book was trying to help people understand, because at this point, this is where my understanding was that everything isn't going, in my opinion, and I think I lay that bare, crazy on accident. There's a lot of people who have spent decades writing about the changes they're pursuing in institutions like education and in policing. Yeah. And you can go and read those books, and they tell you exactly what they're doing. And then you see the changes in your real life, and you put two and two together and go, oh, okay, this is where this comes from. So the first book was really just an exploration of, hey, here are the main arguments you hear right now. And at this time, you know, it was shortly after 2020. So a lot of people were learning about systemic racism for the first time. They were learning about the patriarchy for the first time. And there were some common arguments and kind of cliches and one-liners people would say in workplaces or in friend groups, like you've got white privilege, that people are encountering for the first time. They had no idea what it meant. And that book's purpose was to show people that those arguments come from a very specific subsection of philosophy, really religious studies, I would call them. And here's a very broad overview and general look at those theories and where they come from.
Yeah. What do you think about how this has spread? Is it like a top-down intentional action by a coterie of bad actor, or like evil masterminds, or is it the case that these individuals with these ideas align with institutional incentives, where it's kind of this stuff just kind of works because it's bureaucratic? It allows the bureaucracy to grow. It works with the, it's an accelerant for the DNA of some sort of bureaucratic Kafkaesque momentum, institutional momentum, rather than like an intentional agents doing this. It's just these ideas were selected by the institution because it helps with the institution.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's one I've wrestled with for a really long time. I think I split the middle in my answer. I mean, it's very clearly, and we talk about this in the latest book, some of these ideas are being pushed top down. So for instance, the Biden White House, I don't know if you saw their post about Nex was the name of the individual who it was recently reported.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Committed, not intentionally. It looks like it was an overdose. And again, maybe can look and confirm that. Yeah. But it's pushing these narratives about things from the top down. The United Nations certainly is. The education arm of the United Nations certainly is and has been for decades. But also, I think it's just a general result of the long march through the institutions. I mean, we write a lot about this in the book, but the capture of the education schools specifically did tremendous damage. I think that's a machine that once you build it, you don't necessarily need some conspiratorial worldview to see how that thing can then produce the exact type of ideology that it wants to produce once it was there. So I think it's both top down and bottom up. I don't know what the weighted value of either of those are. Some days I'm like, oh my gosh, this is all coming from X, Y, and Z top down. Yeah. And then other days I'm thinking, well, this person not once in their life has ever consulted the UN for anything, but they're espousing all of these ideas. Where did they get it? Okay, they got it in the ed school. So really depends on the day. I think we're kind of sandwiched in between both, which makes it really difficult to combat. It would be easy if we could point to one thing and get everyone's attention nailed down in that one thing and say, this is clearly where it is all coming from. Let's attack the ideas coming out of that thing and see what happens. But I just don't think it's that easy. And that's not an answer a lot of people like to hear, because that doesn't lend to an easy solution to fixing the problem, but that's kind of where my thinking's at.
Hold on. I might be frozen. Are you frozen? Am I frozen? And the internet, of course, switches off. Not connected.
I lose you?
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries. Was it Comcast, me or you?
No, Comcast has been really messing with me lately. And my wife too, which I'm going to hear in just a moment here. So why were these American institutions specifically, or Western institutions more broadly, susceptible to capture? Why were the education system, was there a lack of belief in an alternative ideology? Was there something in wokeness that attaches to, attacks, and then mutates liberalism, in your point of view?
Yeah, again, this is something I think there's a lot of directions you could go in this. But I think the biggest thing is specifically with queer theory is queer theory was designed to attach to values and to norms and to standards and to rules. You know, we say this in the book that when queer theory was first applied to education in roughly 1993, which is only 2 years after it got its name by Teresa de Laredes and a conference in 91, it was already being described as having achieved basically escape velocity in the academy. Within 5 years of it being applied in the academy, people were talking about, hey, maybe we're queering too many things. It's going too fast. It's kind of escaping, you know, the cult gurus, the first few people. But it's really good at attaching to values. And this stems, in my opinion, from what's called immanent critique. And the Frankfurt School was famous for developing critical theory to level immanent critiques. And what that means in plain English is that critical theory, which queer theory is part of that lineage, attaches to the values of the thing that it's trying to attack. So for instance, someone who's espousing critical theory or queer theory can walk into the United States and say, hey, you stand for justice, but there's poor people everywhere. Or you stand for justice and there's a poop map in San Francisco and there's feces all over the place. Clearly, this isn't justice. And then they attack through that avenue using your values against you. I'm not super religious, but I know this has happened in the church. This is kind of a war that's raging on in the church right now, where this woke ideology, woke Marxism really, has done a really good job at attaching to things like Christian values and using those against the people that espouse them. So they get you, because they've got you by your values, to start doing activism with them. They kind of grab you by the collar on the leash and start directing you and say, hey, you espouse the values of peace, justice, and equality, but clearly we don't have those things. You're doing something wrong. You're the bad person. Follow us. I've got the unique insight.
Okay. And what's the counter to that, to that sort of attack or assignation?
Well, I think the simplest counter is saying no. First, you've got to realize, I think the big thing is you've got to realize this is happening to you.
You're being manipulated.
Yeah, I don't know what part of the U.S. you live in, but I live in Wisconsin, and around here, people are really nice. The average person on the street that you meet doesn't want to offend anyone. They want to be nice to you. They assume that you have the same tether to reality that they do. They don't assume you've got bad intentions or you're trying to manipulate them. So they're very susceptible to being manipulated by people with bad intentions, because they just that comes so far out of left field. And by the time they realize that, they've already got your balls in a vise and you think, oh gosh, how did I get here? I'm in too deep.
Okay. So
stopping it, I don't think anyone's figured that out right yet, because we haven't stopped it. I know the word no works wonders, but in order to use the word no, you have to know you are under some sort of manipulation. And that's really difficult because of how they've captured the language of everything. I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, you hear in schools all the time, we've got to have inclusive schools. We want to teach children how to be problem solvers. We want to have engaging curriculum. You hear these words and you think, well, how can I possibly be against that? And then behind the door in the Trojan horse comes all of this stuff that you're wholly unprepared to fight, because you have agreed at the outset that these are the principles we want to stand for, but you've given up the definition of those terms without knowing it. You've seeded that ground, and then it's kind of too late.
And so on an individual level, you do that, but if the what about the institutional level? Like alternative institutions, burn it all to the ground. I mean, I'm more and more inclined to just burn it all to the ground because of the way that the things are shaking out with the treatment of children's reproductive capacities. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's ghoulish, it's evil, it's demonic. My opinion is that especially the institutions of higher learning, the education schools specifically, cannot be saved. I think we need to uproot them, root stock and branch, and start with new institutions. Now, I don't know what the heck, I'm just a dad doing this in my spare time. I don't know what the heck that looks like, but I do not think they're capable of being saved. Another thing we say in the book is by 1992, Isaac Gottesman, who's a Marxist educator, is saying, he's written a book called The Critical Turn in Education, and he's laying out in his own words from the Marxist perspective how Marxists have captured the educational infrastructure in the United States. And he's talking about by 1992, they've got it all. It's completely captured. So they've been there for over 30 years. I don't know how you introduce any sort of reform in an environment where no one understands anything outside of the Marxist perspective for how to do education.
Okay. Yeah.
You've got a podcast and you've got a lot of viewers. I'm sure you've gotten some of this, but these people, when you tell them no, they don't get too happy about it. I mean, there's not a lot of coming to agreement with them. And I don't think there's any sort of agreement to be had with people doing the types of things they're doing to children. So I think you need to just start fresh with new institutions. Don't know what that looks like. I'm not the one to do it, but I think it's needed.
Well, I mean, education is big enough, but if you're talking about the medical industry.
Have you seen the WPATH files? Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I've been immersed in all of that stuff forever.
Have you?
It was like, people are like, oh, this is new. I'm like, no, I've known about it for a long time, but I'm just a little podunk podcast, you know, but yeah. But the data coming out on puberty block, well, let's just say the dearth of data on puberty blockers is just criminal in and of itself. Like, just this massive push to stop, to halt the puberty. You don't get that back. You don't get that back. You have a window when you learn language. You have a window when your brain develops and prunes its connections and stuff. Once that window's gone, you're not going to get that back. So they're effectively not just sterilizing, but retarding an entire generation in the name of this made-up concept. This is a good thing to hear your point of view of the trans kid. What do you think about the etymology, or like the history of this concept of the trans kid? It's like this holy grail of queer theory. It seems like it's like both itself and its opposite. It's like, it's very queer in the queer theory point of view. Why do you think that caught on, and why is it so, just people bow before that? It's such a beautiful idea, terrible in actuality, but it captures the imagination of so many people.
Yeah, it does. Well, I think it caught on because queer theory captured all of our institutions and pushed it down our throats. And then, of course, you combine that with the rise of social media at a time where, I don't know how old you are, but I know when Facebook was becoming a big thing, and even MySpace before that, it was a time for the first time where you literally are manufacturing your identity online. You are no longer who you are. You can present whoever you want to be to the world. So queer theory rises to prominence at the time that that's happening for the first time. And I think they fit together perfectly. But with the trans kid, it's really contradictory. I think I should say this now. So if there's listeners who they're being introduced to these ideas for the first time, queer theory has nothing to do with being gay, lesbian, or bisexual, essentially nothing at all. That you can't even call it a coalition. Some people just happen to be gay or lesbian or bisexual. It's not this homogenous community that you can just throw together and everyone believes the same things. But queer theory is rabidly against the idea of gay, lesbian, and bisexual people who are fitting into society as it is. Because if someone is fitting into normal society and they're living a normal, happy, healthy life, they lose their radical political potential that queer theory wants to latch onto to use to destroy everything. Okay. So for anyone listening, queer theory has nothing to do with being lesbian, gay, or bisexual. And then I'll also note for the trans thing, and I'm going to speak to you in the audience like I would to my dad, because all of this stuff is new to him too. And I really make it simple because, like, what the hell is going on with this stuff? Yeah. Trans, everyone hears trans and they think transsexual. They think a child where something has gone wrong in the normal developmental process, and you've got some unambiguous child that has been born and you can't tell whether they're male or female. You literally can't tell the sex of the child, which is not true. That is not what these activists mean when they say trans, if they've got a transgender child. They're not talking about, most often, they are not talking about transsexual kids, or intersex kids is really the word to use for it. They are talking about kids who do not fit into the binary. They're not male or female. They're on a spectrum of sexuality. They're on a meaning not sexual preference, but like their actual sex, because this is what queer theory pushes, is the idea that biological sex, which is just sex, I have to correct myself every time I say biology before it, is a spectrum. There's not just male and female. There's an infinite potentiality, is the word they would use to describe it, of those things. So people
and just to interject, they also have a brain sex, a sexuality, and then a biological sex.
Yeah, right? And this gets
gender unicorns.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll see this most often in like the genderbred unicorn, or the newest one I think is the gender bear. That's
kind of bear.
That in itself is contradictory, because if you're talking to a real cultist who understands queer theory for what it is, they don't believe there is any essence to a child. There's nothing that precedes action in the world. So there is no such thing for them as a brain sex or a sex. It does not exist. It literally, you just happen to be born in a body that has a vagina or a penis or something in between on the spectrum, they would say. And society is what convinces you to make that body mean something. So you imprison yourself in that body because of society's expectations of you. But I think that word has worked, to answer your original question, has worked so well, because normal people hear trans and they immediately, in my experience, assume intersex. So they think, oh my gosh, here's this child who was born and they didn't develop normally,
they
and they've got this condition.
Defect. Yeah.
It's going to be more difficult for them. And gosh, we should have empathy and compassion, and we should make sure to include them. I think most decent people who have no idea what's going on, that's the thing that runs them over like a bulldozer. Now, for people who do know what's going on, I think trans is just the thing to ram down everyone's throats to get whatever it is you want through the door, so you can start breaking things. Mm-hmm. But it really is a magical word, just like all of their magical words, like inclusion, diversity, equity. They all don't mean what we think they mean. They've been redefined.
Is it really true that all they want to do is smash things? Because that's just really hard to believe that people would be so nihilistic and self-destructive and purely destructive, especially when they preach about care and inclusion and diversity. No, I know, most of my audience knows, but I'm continually baffled. Do you really think they just purely want the destruction of the world order? And
no. No, of course not. I think some of them are very, the ideology preys on a lot of people with mental health issues who may really want to break things. They don't want to break it. They just want to break the things that they personally don't like. And I think the ideology is a great way to get that done. They want power. They want whatever it is that they want. They don't want to, I don't think they personally want to destroy their own lives. I think they want whatever it is they want. But the ideology itself is purely designed to destroy things. That's why it goes out of control so quickly. And you can have medical institutions that are cutting the healthy breasts off of 13-year-old girls and putting them on puberty blockers. Yeah. I mean, the ideology is a cult religious ideology. It only knows how to dissolve and break and destroy. So wherever it enters, regardless of anyone's intentions, it's going to do those things.
Okay. For sake of this discussion, you brought up the term Marxist education or Marxist framework several times. Yeah. You just dropped the word Marx. From your point of view, what does that mean? And how is Marxism related to sexual deviancy or just the erosion of anything between normal and deviant, and also the manipulation through a huge organization and an institution of the healthy body parts of children? Why is destabilization of sexuality and gender identity, how did that develop from what Marxism is and what is Marxism?
Yeah, that's a big story. We spend the first half of the book on that. Okay. So please, I'm going to give a much shorter response in the time that we've got today. So please go read the book. Feel free. Yeah. There's
the
a much longer
answer.
Queering
of the American Child.
Yes, thank you. So specifically for education, I mentioned Gottesman earlier. He wrote a very illuminating book in the late 2010s that described the Marxist basically rampage through our educational system. And essentially, the Marxists in the second half of the 20th century were facing a huge problem. Marxist theory had evolved, and they're looking at the US and Western societies, and they're thinking, how can we get these societies for these people who don't want socialism and communism to go forward with socialism and communism when the societies keep reproducing themselves through things like education, the law, media, family, the church? How do we get them to break them? And ultimately, on what they decided, and they explore this and explain this in their writing, specifically the works of Paulo Freire, who I think is the key to unlocking that whole story, if we can capture the schools. Because if you can capture the schools and get to the youth, then you can reproduce a new generation who can demand new change, the type of change that you want, that can push that down the pipeline and then change schools again. And it's this snake eating its own tail sort of thing.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
That's a story we explore at length in the book. Now, how do you get to sex, gender identity? That we explain in great detail. And the short version of it is it all started, some people are going to hate this, but with feminism. And that's not to say the women's suffrage movement, meaning equal rights, want to be viewed just as anyone else. We're all people. It's a second strand, the religious cult strand of feminism that spawned alongside women's suffrage a little bit after it. So Simone de Beauvoir, who a lot of people think is some great feminist, really what she did is she decoupled what's called gender now from sex. She argued that there are your sex being a female, she definitely believed people were female, does not determine your behaviors, your attitudes, anything about you. It's just the word she described as the peculiarities of your birth. It's just, you were just born that way. What she says, and this is kind of the Gnostic parasite that Lindsay's always talking about, she says that women are defined by men. Men impose these false things on women, these expectations that women need to be a certain way. And ultimately she arrives at her thesis, which is one is not born but becomes woman. And in that thesis, she decouples gender from sex. Now, we all understand that some people throughout history, there's plenty of different cultures and societies where the expectations leveled on women and by women are different. We understand some things women do, depending on culture and historical context, are a bit different. Your sex doesn't wholly determine your behavior in the world. But we also know that if you look at a distribution of human traits, and there's a lot of overlap between males and females, but there is a distribution of personality characteristics and Eisenach's Big Five, that you can more or less tell, not an individual member of the population, but you can more or less look at the population and come to certain conclusions about that. Simone de Beauvoir says, we're going to throw all of that out. And it was at that moment that she nearly guaranteed that that Marxist strain, because she was an existential Marxist, was going to become queer theory. Because once you say that gender is something that is entirely, which I would argue it doesn't exist outside of how we use it for gender terms and language, I wish we'd get rid of that too. But what she says is outside of gender, nothing's determined by that. And the moment you unlock that door, there's nothing to stop the next person from coming in and saying that, well, why don't we just go for sex too? You've opened up gender, like the gender critical feminist. Why not open up sex? And you go through from Beauvoir through Foucault, and you get eventually to someone like Judith Butler. And that's precisely what she says. She says, well, if behavior doesn't follow from sex, it's entirely socially expected of you and you're brainwashed to do certain things, then what is sex? If it doesn't determine anything about you at all, then what is it? Well, maybe it is this thing that is inscribed or inscripted onto your body by powerful what are called discourses that are completely false and made up. Maybe there is no such thing as sex as you or I or someone listening would understand it. You're just born in a body. There's a spectrum of what that body can look like. And depending on where you kind of fall in that spectrum, society expects you to do certain things to hold up this gender binary as it is.
Mm-hmm. Without a counter expectation, without some sort of expectations that follow from sex, biological sex, to social function, how can a society resist this complete dissolution, or dissolution of all gender expectations, all stereotypes, when we know for a fact that stereotypes, one of the big problems with liberalism, color blindness, sex blindness, is that it takes a lot of energy to maintain, and then people end up reinventing the wheel anyways. People end up reinscribing so-called racial expectations, racial stereotypes, or sex expectations and sex stereotypes. Not necessarily superiority or inferiority, but just basic differences. Yeah. I mean, I'm going back to when you said you just want to get rid of that whole thing. I mean, like, something's there. Yeah. There's a reason why we have male and female.
Yeah, there absolutely is.
And him and her.
We could talk a long time about this, but there certainly is. It is one of the most, up until 5 minutes ago, it was one of the most widely studied and understood things out there. No one questioned this at all. I mean, anyone who has ever hung around, if you're a male like you or I, if anyone has hung around women, you know they're a bit different than your male friends. It's just
if you don't, you'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, you don't. You don't need a PhD. You don't need significant research to figure this out. But to your point, though, I think part of the reason we haven't been able to fight back is the people screaming at the top of the mountain saying, wait a minute, 5 minutes ago, this all made sense for everyone. Clearly something has gone on. What's going on? They have been so utterly silenced over the last decade that no one hears their voices any longer. I mean, there's a good case to be made right now that someone could win a Nobel Prize for defending the sex binary. That's how insane things have gotten. And I remember, I think in 2020, I was reading something by Monique Wittig or Judith Butler, I'm sure people came to this conclusion before I did, but I remember posting on Twitter and I was like, hey, within like 3 to 5 years, there are going to be people you meet on the street who are not academics, who are just normal people, who will think sex isn't binary, who think it's just made up, just like gender is. And I remember getting so laughed at and just harassed and abused, like, mm-hmm. you're insane, what are you talking about? But I'm just reading what these people are doing, and it takes 3 to 5 years for what happens in the academy to escape out into the wild and to matriculate to the institutions.
Yeah. Well, I would have to go back just a little bit, I would have to contend that the Nobel Prize will likely be given to somebody who finally disproves the sex binary.
Oh, like, for sure. Yeah.
Because the Nobel Prize committee is completely connected. Like, all these awards and stuff, it's just this institution inscribing itself over and above itself. But why sexuality? Is it purely malevolent, especially with children's sexuality? Why target sexuality? Why not just let the kids be? Why try to imprint on them bisexuality, pansexuality, polyamory? Why destabilize that and open that up? Is it purely liberation? What's the dark side and the light side, or the hopeful side of this?
Okay, I think I get where you're going. There's a couple different sides. I mean, first of all, children are young, they're narcissistic, they can't make sense of the world yet. They're incredibly impressionable. We could list a million things. They're easy to brainwash. So the reason they go after them young, in the literature, the theoretical reason is because they don't want them to grow up through what they think is a brainwashing program to make them turn out to be heterosexual. So they need to get them young before they solidify, because it's harder to brainwash adults. That's their theory.
So they want to brainwash. They know everything's brainwashing then.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes.
So
exactly.
They assume everything's brainwashing. So this is the better brainwashing.
They think everything is brainwashing, except their brainwashing is better because they see it from a perspective that is free from the power dynamics that they're trying to liberate through.
But everything is power.
I know it's contradictory, but they love contradictions. The whole thing is about contradictions. Okay. They play off them. That gives them power. The darker.
So this is like the dialectical thing, like the thesis antithesis, but it's ramped up. It's like on steroids. Everything is just constantly being antithesized or synthesized.
I was explaining this to someone the other day, and I was using sex and gender as the example of the dialectic. And I was saying, everyone thinks today that these queer activists think that sex and gender are different things. But in their theory, they do not. They are the same thing, because you've got the thesis with Simone de Beauvoir is you've got women, and the antithesis is this socialization role. Okay, women become women through this role that's imposed and expected upon them. And the synthesis is sex and you have gender. And what Judith Butler does is she says, well, no, they're actually the same thing. They're both a performance. They're both an act. So it's funny you bring up dialectics, because I was just talking about it, and that's a relevant example. But they feed on contradictions. The darker side of this, if you wanted to go there, which a lot of their writing is very dark, it's very perverse. I know Lindsay likes to talk about the anal yoga, essentially pages upon pages about anal yoga of David Halperin. But a lot of the earlier writers come from sex positive feminism and post-structural sex positive feminists. And a lot of these people, there's no other way to describe it, they were pedophilic. A lot of them argued to abolish age of consent laws. The father of queer theory, Michel Foucault, didn't escape allegations of pedophilia until his deathbed. I think it's come out, I don't know for sure, someone can disprove this or not, that he was raping boys in Tunisia. A lot of these early people were very interested in sex. They were very interested in sex, and the way they described it was cross-generational sex. And they thought the only reason that people couldn't do that, or that was a bad thing, was because you know, some people in society who had privilege had decided that that's a bad thing. And who are you to say that it's not the right thing to have sex with children? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that dark stuff that I tend to like to avoid just because it makes you want to throw up. Yeah. But it's there, and it's a big piece of the queer theory puzzle. And you can see how some people might enter queer theory and figure out what it is and look at it for one way where they're not at all like that. They're not at all interested in, you know, children in that way. They really think it is something different. But you can also see how queer theory has absolutely no brakes, no defense mechanism for a perverse, disgusting individual who wants to have sex with children to go, oh, look at this little toy everyone's playing with, this queer theory thing. Where,
well, it's already obfuscating all values. So, like, you're in that environment, you can't tell who's the predator and who's the not predator, because the ideology itself erodes everything and makes everything queer, makes everything like, and then it also silences the assumption of a assertive morality that draws lines that says here this is wrong, this isn't wrong, and then it speeds up some sort of dysgenics project where the monsters in the population get stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yeah, it's like gain of function. That's how I describe it in the book. It's like gain of function. It takes that kind of stuff and it ramps it out of the stratosphere. I mean, that's why you've got the term MAPS, minor attracted person. Like you've got, it's not just academics using that term anymore and people are defending them. You don't get that in a healthy society with boundaries where you protect children. That's only something that can happen in a society where everyone has been convinced that there are no such thing as morals or values, and all of those things are tied to different instances of power that are illegitimate, and only we are the arbiters of what's okay and not okay. And we say it's okay to be a minor attracted person, to switch prison cells. I mean, have you seen how many people, and I mean, this is right up your alley with the guests you have. I'm sure someone's talked about this. How many people are changing their sex to go into women's facilities for prison. And then women are being, you know, sexually assaulted, of course. And everyone's whipping their head around like, well, how did that happen?
It's like, I don't know if they're, well, if they are even taking notice, and then I don't even know if that reaction
maybe
is
not
necessarily honest. So your book gives a very accessible, plot arc of the origin of this ideology. Knowledge is power, I guess. Maybe that's a Foucaultian term in and of itself, your bio power, your gnosis power.
Your power knowledge, yeah.
But what do you advocate for people to do practically? Like read this thing, understand this thing, and then push back how? Like divest, show up to school board meetings? Do you think even school board meetings, you know, if the entire institution's captured, do you think it's wise to go about that route or what?
Oh, gosh.
Sorry to make things practical, Logan Lansing.
No, that's a good. No, it's good. It's just I can only speak to what I'm personally.
What are you up to?
Doing the first thing was when I, and I think I spoke about this last time, I came across this stuff. I was like, oh, my God, my children are going to be in school. I better figure out what this is because I don't want my children being subjected to this. The first thing is you need to understand that this is an issue. It isn't about inclusion. It's not about empathy. This book will help you understand that. I was in the same spot a lot of people are now in just a few years ago, where I knew nothing about this. I'm not an academic. I have no special training. I still don't even really consider myself a writer. I was just a guy who was like, this is insane. Other people should probably know about this. And in my complete ignorance and naivety, I thought to myself, well, if you just put this out there and everyone will see it and just be like, it's all just going to stop. And of course, I quickly understood there's a lot of people who have been putting this stuff out there and none of it is stopping. So I've only gone deeper down the rabbit hole. But you need to understand what's happening. The book will help you understand that. And I keep advocating for you have to be develop an ironclad relationship with your child. You have to know what's going on in between their ears, because there are other people poking and prodding at school all day to figure out what's going on in between their ears and trying to figure out what they can latch on to manipulate that.
Yeah.
So understand your child, develop a great relationship with them. I don't, the school board question, I've seen a lot of examples of people speaking at school board, and it's great for social media clicks. It doesn't seem to affect a ton of change in the videos that I've seen. I'm sure it has in some places. But a lot of the administrators, I mean, straight up to the Department of Education, are wholly captured. So what are you going to do? A lot of these administrators, my local administrators, just looked at me and said, hey, I mean, these are the standards that are coming from the State Department of Education. Yeah. And then these are the rules we need to follow.
I guess you're in a swing state, but being in a blue or a red state is no defense against this. No defense whatsoever.
Yeah, no, nope. It's in all states equally. It's after all children. And I said it has nothing to do with about being gay, lesbian, or bisexual. I'll also note this. I think it's important for the teachers who may be listening. I am of the opinion, after reading a lot of these teachers and the books they've been publishing about this and doing my research for this book, that there are a lot of really good people who actually are really good people who've been fully duped by this. They think they're doing the right thing. They don't know what it is. And once they understand they're doing something wrong, they go, oh my gosh, I didn't know that's what this was. And they'll stop. So when we talk about teachers, the entire book's about education. When I say teachers, and I say this in the book with James Lindsay, we're not talking about all teachers, clearly. All teachers, I do believe, that have been pushed through a system to make this the end product, but not all of them are aware of what they're doing on any level that they would.
I'm sorry about that.
Are you there?
The teachers, not all of them are malicious.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, I think because of state standards, because they've gone through education schools, because of the way teachers are accredited in the U.S., I think most of them are pushing this. They just don't know they're doing it. And this book will help you explain, if you're a teacher, if you want to know, if you're doing queer theory in your classroom, this book is a great read for you to understand what that looks like. It's, no one is sitting in front of children and saying, this is what queer theory is, and Simone de Beauvoir said this, and Michel Foucault said this. It is distilled down into fun, colorful images, lesson plans. It's mostly facilitated through critical pedagogy. You'll understand what all those words mean if you read the book, and I think it'll be very evident that this sort of thing is happening. Likely, if you're a teacher in your classrooms, especially through things like social and emotional learning, comprehensive sexuality education, you should know about it. If you're doing it, please stop it. Stop it. Teachers for Liberty has a great ring to it. It'd be great if we had a mass movement of teachers rising up to fight back against this thing and try and get change in the Department of Education. Because earlier we talked about, is it bottom up or top down? Right now you've got the Department of Education, like one of the press videos you see on TikTok, where it's like, oh, what are we going to smash today? That's coming down. And you've got a upswirl of activists coming from the bottom up. And it's just this feedback loop that's terrible.
Terrible. Terrible stuff, Logan Lansing.
Yeah,
but at least you're standing up and joining the fight. I know you got a meeting. We had a short meeting the first time, but at least I got a little bit more of your time. Thank you very much for that. Queering of the American Child is available wherever Brave bookstores are selling Brave books like this. And your social media will be linked below. Anything else to plug? Do you have a Substack or something like that going on?
I think you can find it all through my Twitter at Logan Lansing, but I've got a Substack. I just started a podcast. It's not like this. It's just me exploring woke literature in detail for the weirdos and eccentrics that like to listen to that sort of thing.
Well, that's nice to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can find that. If you go on YouTube and look for The Lansing, you should see it.
Okay.
But thanks so much for having me back on. Sorry about the little mix up at the beginning about scheduling. I think that's just the thing now.
I'm looking forward to meeting you in person someday where we can't like muck up the schedule.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, man.
All right, bro. Have a good day.
Bye.